I'm Mark Maron. It's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Blah, 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 blah.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor. How are you doing out there? That, if you're wondering what we're laughing about and what we're applauding here, is Brendan P.W. McDonald got the toy board in right under the wire.
Right at it.
Yeah, you know, the board that makes me be able to do this? Hey, listen, it's the Republican legislature. Or any number of noises, like we program it daily if we have new things in it. And Brendan came in like and hooked it up, and we're like, is it going to work for the opening? He's like, bam, right before we went on, he got it on. I didn't mean to tip it. You know what I mean? I didn't mean to let you in on the process there. Obviously, I have a cold. Something's gone wrong with my throat, so I will be sounding like an adolescent boy throughout the show, occasionally cracking. But I think I'll make it. Riley, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. You know you're going to make it fine. And, you know, that's why Brendan McDonald is Brendan McDonald.
He's right under the wire, always efficient, right on the mark,
yep.
Brendan McDonald.
There he is.
And a big appreciator of the funny noises.
Yes.
Brendan is a huge fan of the funny noises. So, Kalo, how you doing, man? You're getting fat? Is that what you said to me? Like, you calling me a bitch man are getting fat? Is that what you just said?
Yeah.
Let me just make sure I heard you properly.
I'm getting a little tubby.
And when did that reveal to you? Was it on your 15th cup of noodles out of the box from Costco?
It was actually on the treadmill yesterday.
Oh.
I noticed a lot more things jiggling.
Yeah.
That were not supposed to be jiggling.
Dude, do you ever just look in the mirror and jiggle on purpose? Just do one of these, like shake yourself up yeah. And go like, look at me like that guy in Sideways running down the street.
Just I like, actually, you know, time it.
One I'm big like, mess of jiggles.
I time it so I can see, I can count how many seconds until the jiggling stops.
Dude, I don't know. You're not that fat. I mean, I just don't...
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, I just don't know when it's appropriate. See, we see each other every day. I don't know when it's appropriate. I have to wait for you to go, hey, does my butt look fat? Before I can say anything, you know? And then, of course, I'll say, no, man, you look great, because I understand, you know? But then it gets... I'm glad you realized it. Because I've been... I'm kidding, man. I'm kidding. You look great, buddy. You look great. Right. Nice to see you.
Thanks, guys.
So, yeah, thanks, guys. Yeah, great. Thanks, guys. That's all. Dude, I don't know what to say. You know, we got a couple emails from some people out in Boulder, and I don't know what the hell's going on out there, but there's gossip, there's rumors, I don't know what, but I think they're going to usurp us. They're going to put in some local personality of some sort over there. And I didn't realize they could just do that. I mean, I have no understanding about how this business works, Riley. But apparently these contracts that they make with affiliates are just sort of like handshake agreements. But, you know, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. But I hope we have a lot of great listeners in Boulder. They call us. They write us.
We hear from people in Boulder all the time. And we would hate to lose Boulder.
Yeah, Boulder's it's one of our strongholds.
Yeah.
We get mail from Boulder. People send us presents from Boulder. I got a guy out in Boulder who's like, you know, we want to have you out and do a big show.
I remember that. Yeah.
He hasn't followed up lately. I told him, you know, find out some details and we'll do it. You know, but that would upset me if we're off the air in Boulder. So I don't know. Email us at morningsedition.com if you'd like. MorningSedition.com is the website. Sedition at AirAmericaRadio.com. If you hear anything or you want to, you know, get involved somehow, you know, drop us a line.
Yeah.
You know, we like hearing from you. I, of course, I got a little upset about this story, a series of stories in the that came across the board yesterday, which was a federal agency's effort to remove the words gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender from the program of a federally funded conference on suicide prevention up there in Portland, I believe it was. Now, the weird thing is that they wanted to, this was a suicide, you know, prevention conference specifically geared towards this particular, you know, group of subgroups, you know, lesbian, gay, transgender community, which has an abnormally high rate.
Exactly. That's exactly the point. It has an abnormally high rate of suicide for whatever the reasons are.
Right.
People end up killing themselves more from those groups.
Well, I'm sure there's a lot of reasons. There, you know, when one comes to terms with their sexual identity, that's not an easy thing. When one comes to terms with their sexual identity in a repressive culture, that's not an easy thing with the lack of tolerance. To me, this was basically this federal agency saying, hey, you know what? Why discourage them? That, I mean, that is what, to me, is what they're saying. Is they're saying, look, you know, let's not allow them to use these words. And you know what? Why don't we just cancel the conference? I mean, this is really, you know, genetics working its way out. This is the way that, you know, the gene pool gets cleared out of these people. Let's not discourage them from committing suicide.
Why is it that the government seems to have become this instrument of repression, instrument of censorship, instrument of, you know, well, we don't like something, therefore, you know, we don't think it should be a part of, it's part of a pattern. That whole thing with Margaret Spellings, the incoming education secretary, and that whole thing about that PBS series, the same kind of thing. You know, they're putting pressure on people whose views conflict with theirs. And they're trying, I think, to, and we see it across the board with the, you know, the whole issue of intelligent design. They are trying to impose this God-focused view of the universe.
It's the Christo-fascist zombie brigade's war on tolerance.
That's it.
Yes. You know, the thing is this is one of the great democratic ideals. One of the great democratic core values is to, you know, to help people that are not represented fully in this culture, you know, either, you know, ideologically or politically or economically, that this is one of the great possibilities of a democratic culture, is that, you know, there is acceptance, there is tolerance, there is a respect for people to honor their identity, to honor their race, to honor their, you know, their beliefs, you know, and this particular administration through its propaganda wing, you know, which is almost all of the media. And obviously with this guy Gannon and with Armstrong Williams and with a lot of other things that are going on, they are paying to do this. They are putting almost, you know, $100 million into, you know, putting this message out to trick people out of tolerance, to make people, you know, think that they're threatened, you know, by people who think differently than them.
And it's really starting to be made manifest in the black community through clergy people. There was a meeting in L.A., Mark, at the beginning of this month. We didn't talk about it much, but there was a huge gathering of black clergy people at the Crenshaw Center, which is run by Frederick K. Price. And anybody in the black community, you ever watched Sunday mornings, he's always on. He's on for 5 hours. All of this was about same-sex marriage, and the Republican Party played a role in helping to organize it and several others that are going to be going on across the country. What I find fascinating about all of this, most fascinating, is that there are all of these rumors, and I emphasize I am not stating facts here, but rumors about the sexual orientation of a lot of people inside the Bush administration.
Well, this is so revealing about the nature of closeted personalities, is that because of they feel that they have to keep an entire part of their life, an entire, you know, a large element of who they are hidden away, repressed and kept away. It is so easy for them to lie because their entire life is built on a lie. You know, so they, you know, lying is second nature to them. And when they lie, you know, then they overcompensate. And you get people like this guy, Gucker, you know, who is basically, you know, who has put out anti-gay slander, that not only is his life built on a lie because of his closeted nature, but, you know, he overcompensates by actually, you know, through his own self-hatred.
And becoming a verbal gay basher.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and that is, you know, a lot of what, you know, this administration is fueled by, is that this ability to, you know, to hide their true humanity, if they have any at all.
I wonder.
Yeah, and in reaction to that, become the most evil bastards in the world. Now, obviously, some of them have no humanity whatsoever and lack conscience.
Yeah.
But the other ones sold it out a long time ago, and the amount of lies, they no longer know. They no longer have a barometer anymore. But this, to me, was, you know, what we started with is heinous, that they wanted to not only remove the language of this suicide prevention seminar for bisexuals, transgender, lesbian, and gays, but they wanted to, you know, probably just remove the seminar altogether and say, hey, let's not discourage them. That's the kind of culture we're living in. And when there's enough fear in the culture, people will be, you know, tolerance will begin to erode for all of the wrong reasons. You know, it's frightening. I'm being a little heavy-handed, but I'm a little sick, and I'm just trying to stay, you know, I'm going to be emotionally...
Stay centered. Stay focused.
I'm going to be emotionally engaged today, Riley.
There you go.
15 past the hour, we're going to come back and talk about how the... what I always thought was a prophecy for the neocon death cult, which was to create an Islamic bloc out of several countries and put all that Cold War machinery back into place and create the scenario for eternal war. It looks like it's happening. We'll tell you how. It's 16 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Hi, this is Rob Corddry from The Daily Show, here to remind you that when top news reporters and investigative journalists like me want their news skewed so far to the left it's wearing a dress, we turn to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, it's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley on the Morning Sedition program here on Air America Radio.
Yes.
Got a little scratchy throat, but I think I'm doing all right. Thanks for asking. I appreciate it. I know you people are concerned. Now, look, you know, this is scary. There seems to be a new wave of fear and intensity revolving around the neocon agenda in terms of activating what I have always thought was going to unfold as a united Arab front. I think that this is what they were working towards. I think this is what they wanted. I think that, you know, if they we've always said that Iraq has now become a manufacturing plant for terrorists, not unlike the war in Afghanistan, you know, developed a bin Laden, and many other of the original Arab jihadists who went there to fight the Russians, made their bones, got their terrorist chops, and, you know, integrated out into the world and became Al-Qaeda. What we're seeing now is a new generation of young terrorists and some older terrorists in Iraq fighting the Americans, who are our troops, this administration, the neocon death cults project over there, and making similar chops, making their bones and getting their chops and ready to disperse themselves. That is an issue we and Riley and I are going to discuss, you know, later in the hour when we talk about Porter Goss, you know, reintroducing the idea of perpetual fear stateside. You know, usually they only do this during elections. But they're going to do it now, I guess, to push Social Security through.
Anything for Social Security. Anything for the president.
It's an orange alert. What does that mean? We really need to re-privatize Social Security.
Yeah.
So what I want to talk about now, though, this is frightening stuff after the assassination of the former prime minister.
Rafiq Hariri.
Yesterday in Syria.
Now that was the former Lebanese prime minister.
And he was assassinated in Lebanon.
Yes.
But assumed to be assassinated by Syrians.
Yes.
Who have had a presence in Lebanon for years.
They've been in Lebanon since 1976. They currently have anywhere from 14,000 to 15,000 troops inside the country. They are generally given credit in the region for stopping or helping to quell the Lebanese civil war, which had gone on for years.
Mm-hmm.
And at this point, there is a great deal of building Lebanese resentment to the continuing presence of Syrian troops inside the country. And Rafiq Hariri, who was a former prime minister in Lebanon, was leading and helping to lead that opposition, the opposition to the Syrian, what they consider to be an overwhelming Syrian presence inside their country.
So it was an assassination of what was, you know, theoretically from the picture you're painting me is that they saw it as, you know, this guy was a troublemaker, and the Syrians, through either, you know, criminal or political assassination contacts, took him out to stifle what they were seeing as a momentum building against the Syrian presence.
Well, the Syrians have vehemently denied having anything to do with Hariri's assassination. They also condemn his assassination. But at his, you know, at his funeral, at the memorial service for him, there was a palpable anger directed at Syrians. And in fact, there has been inside Lebanon for the last several days since he was killed. There have been attacks on Syrians in the streets. There have been, you know, demonstrations, some of them spontaneous, talking about Syria, get out.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of that at his funeral. Jacques Chirac says the Syrians have something to answer for. Now, Chirac and Hariri were very close. France has had a presence in Lebanon for a number of years before the Syrian occupation, and that influence is still there. So Chirac, who actually went to Beirut for the funeral, one of the few world leaders who did so, was roundly condemnatory of the Syrians. And so, of course, was Condoleezza Rice, who on Capitol Hill yesterday, as she was goaded on, got more and more critical and more harsh in her criticism. Now, she did acknowledge one very interesting point, and that is that the United States has no tangible evidence that the Syrian government had a hand in this assassination.
Now, of course, Riley, you know, we've talked about Syria before in the past because it was, we had supposed, you know, months ago, and we've talked to experts about this, or journalists specifically, and some political people, and was this next on the menu? I mean, Syria, the idea that, you know, after Iraq, they were going to go into Syria, that was really the speculation, you know, going back quite a ways now.
Well,
and
yeah.
Now, with Iran's nuclear plans, you know, coming to the forefront, that sort of took the place of the Syrian idea. You know, now it seems to me that we're back to Syria. Now, as you pointed out to me before the show, the border between Syria and Iraq is massive. And
yes.
and Rumsfeld, even though he's a war criminal in his own right, has accused the Syrians of allowing, you know, many insurgents, many terrorists, and many fighters to cross that border, you know, without any obstacle whatsoever.
Well, see, here's the interesting thing about that accusation. The border would be a bi-state responsibility. There's Syria on one side, Iraq on the other. Even assuming that the Syrians allowed the border or had some interest in the border being porous, well, then what is the responsibility of the American occupying troops in Iraq to seal that border? Remember, Shinseki talked about sealing off that border.
If he had the troops, the 300,000.
Yeah, if he had the 300,000 troops, that's what he felt it would take to seal off that border. Now, Bashar Assad, the son of Hafez Assad, who ruled Syria for 30 years, is now the president of the country. And he's an interesting story, which we can get into a little bit later on. But now, even as Syria says, well, we have no real beef with the United States, the Iranians say, we're willing to make common cause with Syria and create this united front to deal with any attacks that may occur,
which is no small beans, my friends. I mean, the Syrian army is not huge, but they have 319,000 active personnel. They have 354,000 reserve personnel. They got about 5,000 heavy tanks, 4,500 armored infantry vehicles, 3,800, 600 some odd airplanes, and Iran doesn't have much of anything that can extend beyond its own border. So this is scary stuff in the beginning of an alignment that could, you know, prove some of our prophesizing right, Mark.
Well, we're going to go to Tehran in our next half hour and talk to Borzu Deragahi, one of our favorite people, about
great.
The latest in this united front when we continue here on Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Before past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
Riding out this Thursday morning. There's a rumor, folks. This is Morning Sedition, by the way. Okay? Wake up. Okay? Morning Sedition. The facts, the funny, the fury. Don't be stupid. Feels like thinking. Here we go. There's a rumor going around Washington, Senator Joe Lieberman. This is the Palm Pilot, by the way, as you know, because Ramon brought it in, and he was wearing a vest made of fake money. I don't know what this is. The guy's very creative. There's a rumor going around Washington that Senator Joe Lieberman might be the next in line to be Secretary of Defense. Obviously we got this. We got his Palm Pilot for today. 5:30 a.m. Wake up. Check messages. No, why doesn't Bush call? We kissed at the State of the Union and everything was great, but now, yep, maybe I should call him. No, I don't want to sound desperate. Okay. Why doesn't he call, though? Why doesn't he call? 6 a.m. Inform everyone in the House. Nobody uses phone. I'm waiting for an important call. 8 a.m. Call Rumsfeld. Tell him, you don't look so good, Don. You know what's nice this time of year? Aruba. Maybe Aruba would be good. 10 a.m. Respond to criticism that I'm too conservative. But who cares? Who cares what Tom DeLay thinks? 11:30 a.m. Review my current policy positions and soften them until they can be gummed by the elderly. Nice. 12 noon. Why wouldn't he call? We kissed. Why doesn't he call? 1 p.m. Go to local high school. Offer bully my lunch money. Apologize. 2 p.m. See if I can get through Al Gore's call blocker. 3 p.m. Call Howard Dean. Discuss party stance against Republicans. Note, get tough. We should only be on one knee. Just one. You don't want to be on both. Midnight. Any minute now. Come on. Come on. Ring. Come on. Ring, damn it. There you go. So, on the phone, one of our favorite journalists is, he's joining us from Tehran, Iran. Tehran, Iran. You know, ever since I've seen that commercial on CNN with what's her name? What's the how do you pronounce
Christiane Amanpour?
Yeah, Amanpour. Yeah, with the girls like, is it Iran? No, there's no Iran. It's Iran and Iraq. And I'm like, now I'm like, oh my God, I better stay on top of that because I too am a dummy. But on the phone right now from Tehran, Iran, yeah, is Borzu Daragahi. He's a freelance journalist, writes for the New York Star Ledger, Boston Globe, and you know, the Chronicle in San Francisco. Good morning, Borzu. Tell us, what is going on with this common front between Syria and Iran? How threatening is it, and what does it mean?
Well, I mean, to some extent, it means that Iran is not nearly as isolated. Neither Iran nor Syria are nearly as isolated as Iraq was, and it just shows that there are countries that have good relations with other countries that, you know. Any hostility towards them is going to be extremely expensive. Both Syria and Iran they've not only partnered up in this sort of kind of nebulous defense pact, they also have both countries have pretty good relations with Russia and China and Europe, which could not be said of Saddam Hussein's Iraq.
Now, is this, as I have thought all along, that there is an Islamic crescent forming, that there is going to be a coalition of Islamic states that will sort of, you know, re-engage some Cold War machinery and set the stage for sort of perpetual conflict? Is this the beginning of that?
I think it's too soon to judge that, but I think this is just classic statecraft, classic diplomacy. I don't think it has anything to do with Islam at this point. These are two countries that have good trade ties. They have good. There's a lot of pilgrimage goes on between Iran and Syria. They have good diplomatic relations, and they're solidifying them, saying that, you know, we're friends. We're two countries that have common interests, and if we're attacked, then we'll defend each other.
Borzu, President Bashar al-Assad of Syria is a Baathist. That is no problem to the Shiites that run Iran?
I mean, look, this is politics, you know. I mean, this isn't really about Islam and so on. Iran also has really, really good relations with the communists in China and the mafia in Russia, which runs Russia. And they're about as far from Islam as you can get, you know. This is about, you know, countries teaming up in partnership. I don't think ideology has much to do with it.
Okay, you made your point. We keep trying to wrap this into an Islamic thing, and you're not going to let us, and I understand that. And you're probably right, because you know better than I do. But what I do want to know is, what does this mean militarily? You know, how equipped are they as together? What does that look like?
Oh, that's a really good question. You know, both countries, their military is, you know, a lot of antiquated equipment, a lot of, you know, spare parts needed. You know, each country has a lot of, I guess, dedicated nationalist troops it can call upon. But, you know, they don't really have the equipment to supply them. And, you know, I've spoken to a bunch of Iranian-type officials and experts here in the past week. And, you know, they're basically getting ready for, you know, asymmetrical warfare, which, as many listeners know, is a synonym for guerrilla war. So that's their strategy at this point.
Well, what about
there is some sort of attack?
What about the sales? I read somewhere that there's speculation about sales of Russian missiles that can be carried on trucks. What do you know about the Russians arming the Syrians?
Well, yeah, absolutely. You know, the Russians and the Chinese have been selling Iran and Syria weapons for a long time. Whether those are going to be effective against the U.S. high-tech wizardry, I doubt it. I think most military experts doubt it.
Borzu, the assassination of former Lebanese Prime Minister Rafiq al-Hariri seems to have refocused a lot of world attention, certainly American attention, on Syria. Number one, how serious is the recall of the U.S. ambassador from Syria, and will the push to get Syria out of Lebanon, which seems to be the subject of the focus here, how likely is that to possibly happen?
I'm not sure how likely this to happen, but Syria is flouting a UN resolution that has called on it to remove its 15,000 troops from Lebanon. The Lebanese officials and people that I know, for them, the Syrian presence is deeply unpopular and very destabilizing. You know, I think most Lebanese would like the Syrians out. They want to, you know, move on in terms of their country and so on. I think that most of the U.S. Administration, they know what's going on in Syria. You know, you have a kind of a weak president who was, you know, former dentist, ushered into his job after his dad passed away. And, you know, really a country that's run by, you know, shadowy intelligence figures and so on. And, you know, they're still trying to figure out who's behind this. But I'm sure the U.S. administration is going to use any excuse it can to put more pressure on Syria.
Does that mean, then, that there may be – is the region expecting the U.S. to do anything further than just pull the ambassador?
I think that's a good question. I think the region is all jittery about what the U.S. is going to do. I mean, you know, you saw it was just a couple days ago, when there was the report on Iranian television of an explosion near Bushehr, where
right.
The nuclear power plant, and the whole region went crazy, and you know, oil prices shot up, you know, and even the U.S. stock exchange started plummeting. So you get a sense of, you know, one little report on a TV station that turned out to be nothing. It just shows the level of tension now in this region.
What was it? It was they were constructing a dam or something?
Yeah, it was like an explosion to build a dam.
Yeah. So,
Borzu, do you think in your heart of hearts that the Syrian government or Syrian intelligence had anything to do with the death of former Prime Minister Hariri?
You know, my guess is this was... My educated guess, just because I've been in Iraq for so long, and this is where I'm usually based, this had all the hallmarks of al-Qaeda. I don't think the Syrians would be stupid enough to do something like that to, you know, Hariri, who was, you know, for all his opposition to the Syrian presence there, he was a man they could do business with. He was a guy they could talk with, at least. I don't think they would be dumb enough to do something that provocative. I think this was al-Qaeda. I think this has had all the hallmarks of it.
Well, let's when we come back from our break, Borzu Daragahi, I'd like to talk to you a little bit about what, if that is true, that speculation, you know, what al-Qaeda stands to gain from that. I also want to talk about, how this alliance is going to affect Iraq, and a little bit more about the Russians. When we come back with Borzu Daragahi from Tehran, Iran, it's 44 past the hour. Of course, I'm going to do that now. 44 past the hour, Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning Sedition,
the highest rated, most respected news show in America.
On Air America Radio.
If you're...
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
Morning Sedition, Air America Radio. We're on the phone with Borzu Daragahi, who's in Tehran, Iran. Borzu's a journalist. He's been on the show many times before, but I guess first, there's the liberal agenda from the Streisand compound. Here are marching orders. Write these down. 1. Protest America's non-participation in the Kyoto Treaty by burning a stack of tires on your front lawn. 2. Sneer and ask your boss for an $80 billion raise to pay for Bush's defense budget. That should work. 3. Praise police for busting Kid Rock on assault charges. That's one Bush supporter in jail. It's a start. Good. 4. Praise Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue. It's so empowering that they would devote an entire issue to women with eating disorders. That's a good one. 5. Today's phrase is dropping into conversation. The Army's not developing robot soldiers, man. They're already here, buddy. They're disguised as ATM machines, and they're watching you 24/7. Wake up, sheeple. You drank the Kool-Aid. Snap out of it. Back to Borzu Daragahi in Tehran, Iran. We were talking about the assassination of Hariri in Lebanon. We've seen press that says that it was Syria had something to do with it. You've just speculated that al-Qaeda, it reeks of an al-Qaeda hit. Now, let me ask you a question, getting back to the idea of consolidating Islamic countries. Isn't that not only what the neocons want, but also what Al-Qaeda wants? Why would Al-Qaeda do this and not identify themselves as the guilty party?
To create troubles in the Middle East, to delegitimize and destabilize these secular governments, which is what it's been trying to do for a long time, you know. And this guy, Mr. Hariri, is a billionaire who made his fortune, with through the Saudi royal family, doing real estate deals with the Saudi royal family, which is actually how Osama bin Laden, his family made their fortune as well. So this guy was a player in the Middle East, and it just the way the bombing was done, the crude, ugly nature of it, the massive crater. People were saying that the crater was too big for a car bomb. Well, I've been in Iraq. I've seen a lot of car bombs, and those things create really, really big craters when they explode. And I think there's a lot of uninformed speculation going around. It'd probably be wiser just to, instead of raising tensions and hurling accusations, to sort of take a step back and let the situation calm and let the investigation proceed.
Okay, now what about Russia supplying arms in the current state of the world? I thought that we had that the United States and Russia were on some sort of agreeable terms. What do they stand to gain, by giving them new arms?
Well, money.
Right, obviously, yeah.
To a large extent. I mean, you sell someone weapons, you get access to their oil, you get political favors, in the case of Iran and Syria, you get access to a lot of energy reserves, and these are people who are big military customers. You sell them the weapons. You also sell them the spare parts down the road. It's kind of molding countries' military needs to your heart's desire. And it seems like with regard to Putin, whenever he's with Bush, they shake hands and he says really nice things about Bush, and sure, I'll cooperate. And then, a day or two later when he's back in Moscow, he does something like, sell more nuclear technology to Iran. So I don't know what game Mr. Putin is playing.
Borzu, the Israelis are saying that Iran is only 6 months away from having the technical knowledge to produce an atomic bomb. What are the Iranians, certainly no friend of Israel, saying about that Israeli contention?
I mean, they're denying it. The thing with Iran is that the nuclear thing is like a dream that's decades old. It goes back before Iran was a clerically run state, run by clerics. And they're pursuing it. They're pursuing nuclear energy. They want nuclear energy. And there's this fear that there's this loophole in the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty that a country can pursue a peaceful nuclear program and then all of a sudden switch over and make it a non-peaceful one very easily and very very quickly. And there's a fear that Iran is trying to exploit that. Obviously, Iran, if it were trying to exploit that, is not going to admit, yeah, we're within 6 months of creating a nuclear weapon. They're denying it.
What do you think?
With regard to the nuclear? I think that, in this current climate, just thinking about it geopolitically, I think that a country that is being threatened so adamantly and forcefully by the largest superpower in the history of the world, they would be foolish not to pursue nuclear weapons.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're kind of backing the cat into a corner here where they have no choice but to, I'm sure it's on a, on some level it's on an accelerated pace to create nuclear weapons, because that's the only thing that can, prevent a U.S. attack, especially when they see what happened with Iraq and what's not happening with North Korea. What message does that send to a country like Iran or a government like Iran that's paranoid in the first place?
Borzu, I want to shift gears for a quick second to talk about Iraq. Apparently, there is a secret ballot going on between the two leading contenders for prime minister, Shalabi and Jafari. Some copy we got here really jumped out at me, because Shalabi apparently, in addition to promising to cancel contracts that the government, the interim government, has signed, he's also talking about dropping charges against Muqtada al-Sadr. What's that about?
I mean, Chalabi is what I call, and I've met him a few times, he's what I would call like a political nymphomaniac, and when it suited his purposes, he you know, got in bed with the neocons in Washington, and then when it suited his purposes, he got in bed with the radical Shia and the Iranians clerics in the Middle East. And so, you know, he basically got cut loose from the Pentagon people, and now he's courting another group of people, the radical Islamists in the triumphant coalition in Iraq.
But isn't he secular? Borzu, isn't he a secular, I mean, isn't he seen as leading the secular wing here?
Chalabi is all about Chalabi. I don't think he really has that kind of ideology. And, you know, I mean, he's wooing a certain segment that is, you know, the people who have won the election, you know, the sort of moderate, at least in Iraqi terms, Shia-led groups that have won the election are, you know, being really kind of reasonable in their approach towards the occupation and the, you know, economy and the future of Iraq. And that's creating a little bit of discomfort among the more radical elements in this really big coalition. And so Chalabi is, like, wooing them, trying to get votes. Bottom line is no one really trusts him. Everyone kind of uses him. And this secret balloting is just a joke. It's something that Chalabi wanted, and I'm sure it has no real credibility to the Iraqi people, or the Iraqi people in the triumphant coalition. Ibrahim al-Jafari, the leader of the Dawa party and number two on the Shia list, will be the next prime minister.
Okay, now quickly, last question. How does what's going on with Syria and Iran affect the internal politics in Iraq as you see it?
And that's a really good question. The Syria and Iran are both Iraq's neighbors. I mean, it creates real problems for them, and it creates real tensions for them. If the U.S. were to step up hostilities towards Syria and or Iran, that is one option that Syria and Iran will have, and according to some officials I've spoken to, will exercise, which is to stir up trouble for the U.S. and Iraq.
All right, we got to go.
Iraqis, sure.
Okay, thank you very much, Borzu.
Nice talking to you guys.
It's great
talking
to you.
Take care, Borzu. Thanks again.
I didn't mean to cut him off, but he answered the question for the most part. It's it definitely raises the heat.
He always has some really interesting information for us.
It's great. He's great. We're going to be back with...
we're going to talk a little bit about Porter Goss.
Oh, man.
Goss on the Hill yesterday. I don't know if that was the fool on the Hill. We've got the Morning Tradition Radio
Get
Theater.
Get ready for the alerts.
Yeah.
The alerts are coming back.
And so are we here on Air America Radio.
Having trouble.
Six past the hour, you're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. What an hour that was. You know, whenever we talk to Borzu Dargahi from Iran or Iraq, I'm just a mind blown because he speculates that hit on how do you pronounce his name?
Hariri.
Hariri. In
Rafiq
Syria.
Hariri.
Rafiq Hariri, which has been, you know, sort of attached to Syrians.
Yes.
But he's saying that it smelled like Al-Qaeda all over it. And this is just, you know, Al-Qaeda trying to disrupt everything in the Middle East.
It's interesting because he talked about the crude nature of the attack. Apparently, you know, a suicide bomber just drove up next to the convoy or whatever. He said that the fingerprints of Iraq are, not Iraq, of Al-Qaeda is on this. And not Syria, because he doesn't see what Syria would really have to gain from any of this.
You know, it's amazing that, you know, this is all of a sudden there is a new wave of terrorist alertness coming out of many areas in the government. You know, Porter Goss, the new head of Homeland Security, the head of the CIA.
Yes.
Gets out yesterday and says, guess what? He says exactly what Riley and I and many other people who are smart have been saying for like a year now. Chris, can we hear that bit of sound?
Al-Qaeda is intent on finding ways to circumvent U.S. security enhancements to strike Americans in the homeland. It may be only a matter of time before Al-Qaeda or other group attempts to use chemical, biological, radiological, or nuclear weapons. We must focus on that.
See, he's basically saying that, you know, that Bush has been, you know, tried to deny this, but Iraq from day one has become a sort of manufacturing plant for terrorists. It's a place where terrorists make their bones. In the old days, they used to go to Afghanistan at the behest of bin Laden and some other freaks up there who used to, you know, just say, come on down and learn how to kill. We're killing Russians, and they deserve it. And we're doing it with, you know, American support. Now they're killing Americans. And that's how they're making their bones in Iraq. And Porter Goss is basically saying that, guess what? It's still time to be afraid because apparently we haven't effectively done what we're supposed to do stateside to protect us. Tom Ridge turns out to be just a lackey out there jacking up the alerts.
A lackey.
Yeah, just out there. What the hell was that guy doing?
No, you're right. See, that's why I'm laughing, because you're so right. He was, as it turned out, just a lackey. But you saw a bunch of lackeys yesterday, Mark, on Capitol Hill. You saw Goss going to the House Select Committee on Intelligence. You saw Rumsfeld going to the House Armed Services Committee. And what does Rumsfeld say? Now, this is to show you how whack these people are. Rumsfeld, when asked about the various and sundry estimates in the CIA, in the DIA, and all these different intelligence organizations, how many insurgents are there inside of Iraq? And you know what Rumsfeld says? Their estimates don't matter. He doesn't trust any of them.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know how many there are. There may be a lot less than the estimates. There may be a lot more of the estimates. I don't trust any of the estimates. Now, mind you, one of the estimates comes from his own agency. The DIA is the Defense Intelligence Agency. And yet, here's Donald Rumsfeld saying, well, I don't know with the number of fighters. Here's what you have that people seem not to be able to get their brains around inside the Beltway. You have situations where, for example, the Egyptians in the past have come down on Islamic radicals. You have the Syrians periodically coming down on Islamic radicals. Where do these radicals go? If it's hot for them in Egypt, if Assad's going to bury, not Assad, if Hosni Mubarak is going to bury them up to their neck, pour honey on their heads and let ants loose, then they're going to go somewhere where they can be safe. They're going to go somewhere where they can practice jihad without having to worry about the Egyptians breaking their doors down and killing their kids.
Hosni Mubarak will only do that if he's subcontracted by the U.S.
By the U.S., yeah.
Some extraordinary renditioning behavior.
Yeah, so now you've got a situation where, yes, Iraq has become this magnet for jihadists from all these different countries, from Jordan, from Egypt, from Syria, from Lebanon, from all of these different places, all coming in. They know that the border between Iraq and Syria is porous. If they can get to Syria, they can get inside Iraq. They know that. Now, whether or not the United States wants to blame Assad's government for that fact, and not the fact that the Americans really shortchanged the number of troops they were going to need to make that border secure, is something that's open to debate. What's not open to debate is exactly what Goss said, which is exactly what you've been saying for months, that the place has become a terrorist recruiting ground. We're talking about Iraq now. A terrorist haven, a terrorist recruiting ground, a place where people from all over that region.
Well, they're using language now. Like, you know, Al-Zarqawi is going to say, not only is he, you know, assumed that he set up shop there, but they're going to say, well, that's where he's going to operate out of it. It's almost as if there are travel agencies that are fronts for Al-Qaeda, you know, suggesting terrorist junkets to Iraq. You know, get on board, learn, vacation, and learn how to kill Americans and any, you know, anyone who is against the theocratic rule of Muslim nations.
Now, there's also another dimension to this that we haven't really gotten too deep into, and we may get into it a little further on in subsequent programs. But remember one thing. If you look at, for example, Iraq, Iran, and Syria, what do they all have in common? Huge energy resources. Energy resources that have never been put together as a group like the Saudis and the Emirates and the other oil-producing states. They are generally viewed as a group. Iraq, Iran, and Syria, for various and sundry political reasons,
rogue states,
have never seen themselves as a group.
Yeah.
Until now.
Right. Until now, they have this this Muslim front developing. And if you, like you said, and like Borzu said, that this isn't so much about Muslims, but it's about, you know, business. It's about politics.
Who's going to control that oil if, for example, because when you start looking at the combined oil resources of those three countries, Iran, Iraq, and Syria, and then you look at the oil resources of Saudi Arabia, the Emirates, Dubai, and the rest of those people, you see that what do you got? You got competition.
Sure.
You have intense competition, which America, by the way, does not necessarily want to see take place in terms of their friendship with the Saudis.
Right, but who is going to control that oil? Are you saying that it could be China or Russia or us? I mean,
well, the Chinese want the oil. But the question is, who is going to control the governments of that region and who will benefit from that oil production? The Shia, I think, see lightning in a bottle here. The Kurds as well. You know, there's some oil wealth in Kurdistan and what I guess they would call Kurdistan as well. All of a sudden, they're saying, wait a minute. We have resources here. And if you combine the Iraqi resources with the Iranian resources and the Syrian resources, and they have never been encouraged to see themselves as a group for business purposes, then what happens? What happens if they're seen as viable competition in the world to the Saudis and the Emirates states?
Well, I imagine I'm going to be paying a little bit more for oil. Well,
you may be paying a lot more for oil.
Well, thank God I don't have a car. Some guy wrote a letter. He said, you know, don't be a vegetarian. Just stop, you know, using oil. I'm like, I don't have a car. Take it easy. Let me eat my soy meat and take the train. Shut up. But you're right, Riley. I mean, and this is like on some level plays into that sort of like, you know, free market utopian idea that the neocons had. This might be another part of their agenda.
This is part of their agenda.
Because they can only benefit if the oil prices are jacked up in the Saudis, right?
Oh, yeah. They benefit. But the other side of it, Mark, is that these regions are now starting to see themselves, and it's true in South America, too, ironically enough. They're starting to look at themselves differently. And we're not aware of it because we don't really care as Americans what goes on in the rest of the world. These people are starting to look to disengage themselves from the Western paradigm that they feel has dominated them for at least the last two centuries. They want to get away from Europe. They want to get away from America. They want to be able to look at themselves in the mirror for a change and say, gee, what can we do among ourselves? There is already pretty free trade between Iran and Syria, again, despite the religious differences.
But is America and Europe going to let that happen?
That's the question. And, of course, in the background, 1.5 billion Chinese are usually not wrong.
Yeah, just hanging out.
And they need oil, too.
They're just sitting there waiting till everyone is Chinese.
There you go.
We'll be back in a second. I want to talk a little bit about the thing that bonds everyone in this country deeper and more intensely than anything else is, of course, fear. 15 past the hour. We'll be back to talk about that after this on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition is more than just a commute companion. Listen online at morningsedition.com. Morning Sedition on the air and online. Listen at the office at morningsedition.com. Air America Radio.
Past the hour. What is that? What is that we're listening to?
She Gave Good Sunflowers.
By who?
No idea.
Interesting. Someone's sneaking in music choices, man. Someone's sneaking them in. I don't know what that is. Yeah, I know who that is. Yeah, that's funny, Dan. That's great. Dan Pashman, son of Linda Pashman, thinks he's just scored some point by putting the bat. I know who the Black Crowes are. You can tell that hacky crap anyway. Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Hey, we're trying to be the Faces and the Stones because we got no personality. Here's my dream diary from last night. I finally break down and I get an iPod.
Ooh.
And I've got the Stooges in there and Zeppelin, AC/DC, and it's all white and shiny, and I stick the little buds into my ears and spin the wheel and punch it in. I start walking downtown listening to Exile on Main Street. You got me rolling. They call me the tumbling die. Yeah, rock and roll, you know what I'm saying. Then I hit the shuffle button. Second later, very faintly, I hear this voice. Mark, I look around. Mark, there it is again. Tune out. No one's reality is valid except for yours. I start pushing buttons, but I can't get rid of this voice. Don't give money to that homeless woman. She's lazy. Don't help that kid getting robbed. Don't get involved, Mark. Listen to me. Tune out. I start screaming at it. Shut up! Shut up! I try to yank the buds out of my ears, but they won't budge. They're stuck in there. Go shopping, Mark. You deserve it. What you really need are some new shoes. I yell, shut up, man. What the hell? Shut up. I walk by a butcher shop. Meat is delicious. Vegetarians are trying to control you. Mmm, porterhouse steak. I yell, shut up, evil iPod, shut it. It says Social Security is in crisis. We must privatize, Mark. The Kyoto Treaty is a sham. There is no global warming. President Bush is keeping us safer. I yell, no, no, no. Then the evil iPod lets out this high-pitched tone that eats through my eardrums and my brain and my soul. And just before I pass out, I hear it say, go to Starbucks. Tune out. I woke up and my bed was filled with tickets for my show at Symphony Space, which is tonight, and it is sold out. There you go. So, okay, now we're talking about Portergas. We're talking about this, you know, re-revealing of the fact that, yes, Iraq is manufacturing terrorists. Yes, there are probably sleeper cells in this country right now that are unknown to us. Yes, nothing has been done to properly protect us from the inside in a lot of ways. Or maybe it has. But what he is doing is he's basically saying, get ready to be afraid again. Because as we know, Tom Ridge, and now we know for sure, Mark Riley, let's talk about this story that Tom Ridge, well, I always knew it. Like, where the terror alerts been? I don't know. Right before the election, there were plenty. Mm-hmm. This guy was a tool, a stooge, who was there. The entire terror alert system was put in place to basically be used as an election tool.
Tom the Shill Ridge. You may remember, because we played it for you here during the election season, Tom Ridge's now famous statement, quote, we don't do politics in the Department of Homeland Security. Well, someone came along with some Freedom of Information Act requests for some schedules and calendars of Tom Ridge during the campaign season. And it turns out that Tom Ridge met privately with Republican pollsters twice in a 10-day span last spring as he was embarking on trips to, coincidentally, a dozen battleground states in the presidential election. Ridge met with Republican strategists Frank Luntz and Bill McInturf during a period the secretary was saying his agency was playing no role in the reelection campaign. Now, again, this was revealed in Freedom of Information Act produced calendars for Tom Ridge during that time.
He was in charge of fear dispersal for the neocon death cult propaganda unit.
Yes. Now, mind you, Tom Ridge's aides resisted giving up those calendars for over a year. They finally provided them to the AP 3 days after Ridge left office.
Right, of course. It's just such a standard Republican, you know, way to do things. It's like, all right, I'm out clean. I can get speaker money. You know, go ahead, say whatever you want. Doesn't matter. There's no such thing as deficits.
Now, this is, again, language parsing in George W. Bush's America.
Mm-hmm.
I love stuff like this, just because it's so parsed.
All right. Yeah.
This is a former Assistant Homeland Security Secretary who attended one of the sessions with Luntz and Ridge. Quote, we did not discuss Homeland Security in a presidential campaign context. We asked him his impression of how well we were explaining whatever issues were of the day. There was no follow-up meeting. Now, you see how much wiggle room that she just gave in that statement?
Explain it to me.
In other words, we didn't discuss Homeland Security in the context of the presidential campaign.
We
did discuss Homeland Security, but it wasn't in the context of the presidential campaign.
We were just having lunch.
Never mind, the presidential campaign was looming rather large at that point. This was in the spring of 2004.
As if Tom Ridge could separate the two. As if that guy has the brains to separate anything. What a lunkhead.
We asked him his impression of how well we were explaining what issues, whatever the issues were of the day. So in other words, if I'm putting out a terror alert tomorrow, gee, does that, are we doing a good job in telling people exactly what? See, because as far as I know, the Department of Homeland Security did an awful job of explaining the different terror alerts in terms of saying to people anything more than be afraid.
Well, they never did. They're like, it's general, it's broad, it's chatter, it might happen, in this 20-mile radius. Maybe that was about the most kind of information they got. They were completely impractical. They were meaningless. All they did was, you know, create fear. And, you know, there is evidence. You know, and if you want this on paper, I mean, this is old news to some of you, but there were 4 terror warnings in 2002, okay, including 1 orange alert. There were 6 terror warnings in 2003, including 4 orange alerts. There have been 6 terror warnings in 2004, there were, including 1 orange alert. And the greatest density of terror warnings came in the lead-up to the election. There were 5 terror warnings in the 6 months before the election. All right, so that That was an election tool. Now, here's what you got to ask yourself. What does this administration have to gain by recreating and fortifying the culture of fear? I mean, when you, it's the spousal abuse model of politics, is that when you start, beating the hell out of your populace, metaphorically, with, frightening them to death, and they're walking around in perpetual fear, you can pretty much get them to do anything. It works them on a deep level. So, get ready for the fear. Now, the real trick is going to be figuring out why. Why?
Now, Frank Luntz, by the way, the Republican strategist who met with Ridge, now, again, think about this. He recalls nothing about the 45-minute discussion.
They never do. They have these memory problems.
Yeah. Well, I guess they have so
when
much
guilty.
On their minds.
When they're guilty.
When we come back, Morning Sedition Radio Theater, and we've got some tickets. We'll get to that.
Okay.
When we come back, this is Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Having
and now, the Morning Sedition Radio Theater Company players bring you their production of The Shadow Government.
When last we left Mark, Barbara Boxer, Bill Clinton, and a mystery woman who had seduced Mark were about to reveal a global conspiracy. But first, Mark's cell phone rang. From Blanche, his lovelorn assistant / secretary / receptionist / meteorologist / physical therapist /
What is it now, Blanche? And make it quick. I'm about to get some answers in this case.
I just wanted to remind you that... Oh, hold on a minute. There's somebody at the door. Oh no! You?
Blanche!
It can't be!
Blanche! Blanche!
Hello, Mark. I just wanted to have a little chat with your secretary / receptionist / allergist / backup singer /.
Alberto Gonzalez, if you touch one hair on her head, I'm going to track you down and make your confirmation hearing look as easy as Condoleezza Rice's confirmation hearing.
Ooh, big words. We'll be in touch, Maron. Scream into the phone one more time, would you, doll?
Sure.
Now both the lotion and the mask.
Alberto Gonzalez has got Blanche.
Then we don't have a moment to lose. We've got to brief you about what's going on.
Wait a minute. Why should I trust you? I don't even know your name.
Special Agent Henriette Mantell. Mr. President, you want to tell him what's going on?
Mark, Barbara Boxer, Dianne Feinstein, Ted Kennedy and I, along with too many other people to mention, are part of an underground resistance movement to take down the shadow government.
The shadow government.
Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, and Rice, they're just the government they want you to see. The shadow government has people like Bin Laden, Bush Sr., Tony Blair, Tony Robbins, Exxon, Halliburton, IBM, Diebold, Nabisco, Disney, the International House of Pancakes, Radio Shack, selected outlets of Chuck E. Cheese, 1-8 Salt Fish and Chips in Portland, and especially the Department of Motor Vehicles.
I knew it. Tony Robbins.
Plus, we think Nader might be a double agent. We'll know more in 2008.
By the way, Agent Mantell, weren't you and I just about to have sex? Was I the only one who saw that?
I know, Mark. You got robbed. But try to focus, buddy. Senator Boxer, you want to tell him how this works?
Mark, while the religious right and the liberals fight the culture war, the shadow government splits up the global pie, depleting resources, starting wars, controlling the stock market. Nothing happens by accident. Everything is planned.
You know, Monica was a shadow agent sent to take me down.
Bill, how many times are you going to try that story?
Well, she was. Maybe.
They have their own global police force with unlimited resources and their own headquarters, possibly deep under the desert in Sedona.
How dare they build anything in the Sedona desert? Don't they know it's home to the endangered northern leopard frog?
Oh, they know.
Those bastards. Hang on. Man, I gotta download a new ringtone. Hello?
Hello, Mark. It's Blanche, your assistant / secretary / intellectual property attorney /
Blanche, are you all right?
Oh, Mark, were you worried about me?
Of course I was worried. You're the only one who remembers all my online passwords. So what happened?
You really care about me.
Blanche!
They just wanted to know what you know, but I don't know what you know, you know? You never call me.
Are they still there?
No, they just stole your files and left. I'm here all alone. No one is interested in me. No one cares that... Oh, hold on a minute. There's somebody at the door. Oh, no. You? It can't be.
Why does she have to open the door? It has a peephole.
Who has taken Blanche prisoner this time? Will Mark be able to crack open the shadow government when so many others have failed? And for God's sake, doesn't anyone care about the northern leopard frog? Find out next week when we hear Blanche say...
And then I went to the post office, but they told me it was Flag Day, and I thought, well,
Blanche.
Who closes for Flag Day?
Blanche.
But then I thought, oh, hold on a minute.
Don't answer the door again. Blanche, oh. No, don't answer the door.
You?
Door, bad. Blanche.
That's next time on The Shadow Government. And tune in later for Morning Sedition Radio Theater as we continue our Blaxploitation drama. Radio journalist Wayne Gilman is back as News Daddy.
Armstrong Williams, I'm calling you out. Get out from behind that desk and face a real journalist.
I'm not afraid of you, News Daddy. See, I know you can be bought just like anybody else. That's why I brought along a little cheddar. Want a taste?
Well, how about I bribe you? Here's a down payment.
Oh!
And here's one on account.
Oh! On account of what?
On account you're a sellout.
Oh!
This just in. My foot in your ass.
Oh!
Dateline Payne.
Oh!
Who, what, when, where, why, and when?
Ah!
And finally, a breaking story, your face.
Wow, you're some kind of newsman. What's your name, you sexy thing?
I'm Wayne Gilman.
That's later on Morning Sedition Radio Theater.
All right, geniuses, philosophers, kings and queens, working class heroes. Man, Wayne Gilman, I've never seen him laugh so hard. All right, folks, it's 39 past the hour. You're listening to Morning's Edition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hi.
We appreciate you listening. We want to reach out to our listeners in Portland, Oregon. I'm sure they know. No, in Portland. I'm sure, as you know, Howard Dean is going to be there tonight.
Yes.
Taking on Richard Pearl, I think in a mud wrestling match. I don't know. It sounds pretty engaging to me. This is going to be this is tonight at 8:00 p.m. in the Arlene Schnitzer Concert Hall in Portland. I don't know if it's sold out or not, or whether who's selling tickets. But I read about it, and I just wanted to make sure you all knew about it and put your ear to the ground and try to hear what's going on there. As you said, Mark Riley, there was a story that said that there was going to be a media blockout on that, but it looks like it's not going to happen. They're going to hopefully cover it.
No, Howard Dean apparently asked for the blackout before he was elected chair of the DNC, and then apparently, according to his spokesperson, felt that now that he is DNC chair, the blackout wasn't appropriate, so they lifted it.
I think it's great, and I hope that he takes this guy to task, because he's one of the Richard Pearl is one of the sort of the architects of the neocon death cult. He's one of the philosopher evil philosopher kings of the neocon death cult's agenda. And I hope that, as they say in the biz, that Howard Dean tears him a new one.
Well, yeah, because his view of what was going to go on in the Middle East is being proven wrong with each passing hour in Iraq.
Also, I heard some gossip out of Boulder. We got a big station in Boulder. We got a lot of great listeners out there.
We do.
Gotten emails from a lot of them. I don't know. They're thinking about replacing us with some local guy, a painter or something.
A painter?
I don't know. I don't know who he is, and I don't want to judge him. I wish I had more control over this kind of stuff. I don't know how these contracts work or anything. I'm just here talking to you.
Well,
that's what I get up to talk to Mark Riley every morning, and now we're getting emails saying, dudes, what's going on? I don't know what's going on, but you can certainly email us at sedition@airamericaradio.com, and we'll try and keep you in touch with what's happening. And what can be done about it? Because it's certainly disappointing. Because man, we had we get calls from Boulder. We got a lot of great people out there. So I don't know. We'll
we
see
talked
what
to a good number of truckers that run through Colorado too.
Sure.
Some of whom pick us up on that station in Boulder. And we don't want to lose any of our listeners. We love y'all, even the ones we say we hate.
And you know you can podcast. Did you know that?
Yeah.
Listen to me in the iPod. I just got this. I got a little dispatch from iPod Central. 22 million American adults, or about 11% of the U.S. population, own iPods or other MP3 players, a new study has found. All right? Well, one in five people are under 30 have an iPod.
The number dropped to 1 in 7 in the 30 to 39 range and 40 to 48 age groups, which is what I'm in. All right. So similarly, about a quarter of the people with household incomes of $75,000 or more owned such gadgets. The figure dropped to 10. Okay, for those in the 30,000 to 75,000 range, and 6% among those earning less than 30,000. So apparently, the people that need to leave reality the most are the least likely to buy a $500 toy. But the people that have, you know, everything going for them, a few bucks in the bank, are like, dude, why not just detach altogether? Look, I'm flying my own plane and I'm walking past people. Imagine that.
But you know what it is, Mark? In a city like New York, yeah. You can create the whole iPod nation because, you know, the earphones and the earbuds are so ubiquitous. You can see people walking down the street, and they walk past each other, and they got the buds on. They're all nodding at each other. They're creating their own seeming separate reality with these things.
The not-so-secret society of iPod zombies. Pod people. I know, Chris. Chris, Kalo, the Costco ho, is sort of like, you know, big defender of the iPod. I understand the charm. I'm fighting my own fight here, Kalo. I know what it feels like to have every piece of music you've ever had ever with you at all times. I think that's a great thing.
Chris?
It is.
Yeah.
Chris?
What's up, Riley?
Did you listen carefully to Maren's Dream Diary earlier?
Yes. And
Did you hear about the voice inside the iPod?
Thank God it was only a dream.
Yeah.
Hey, Chris, could you please take the headphones off in the studio? We're trying to do a show here. I mean, you know what I mean? Of course you can tell they're iPods because, you know, it's got the white and it looks so shiny. iPod, three letters, like God, okay? Am I talking out my R's here?
Four letters.
No, there's a dash in there. Yeah. It's just put in I God. That's what it is. I God. I am the controller of all music ever made. Watch, at the stroke of my finger, I can make the Rolling Stones play for me twice and then not even, without even changing anything. Oh, a little Zeppelin. You know what? I'm done with Zeppelin. I will now have some classical music. I God. That's what you think you are. But you're the God of a very small country. And it's all in your head, mister. That's all I'm saying. I'm sorry. You know, I'm not knocking. Yes, I am. I'm fighting my own, you know, my own battle here.
I'm not an iPod person either. I'm not into them one bit.
That surprises me because you're the guy, we take one train ride, Riley brings like 4 tons of CDs.
Yeah, I do.
he's got a CD folder.
You should have seen me getting on the plane going to London about a month or so ago. Well, yeah, but I carry that much stuff, but I can't, for whatever reasons, I'm just not into the whole, you know, carrying it around or the little thing.
We need to have a red cap just for Riley's music for a 3-hour train ride.
Yeah, no. But at least I know the sampling rate on all the music I got.
Yeah, but what does that mean, even?
Well, the sampling rate determines how clean the sound is.
See, now there's a question, Mr. Kalo Costco Ho. iPod, I God, Mr. I don't need to be connected because I'm the master of my own domain thing. All right, how is that sound quality on those pods?
Oh, my God, it's just music. Relax.
Oh, wait a minute.
Now you've gone and done it.
Sample rate.
No. It is not music. It is the soundtrack that you are imposing on reality.
You're addicted.
No. I've addicted. See, like, look at Riley. He's a guy that should buy an iPod. He needs it for practical purposes. All right?
Yeah, but I'm not.
All right.
I'm not.
I got a feeling I'm going to buy one.
Really?
This is, well, I don't know. You know, eventually the bullies, and they don't even consider themselves bullies with their condescending white headphones.
The iPod Nation.
Yeah. Screw them. You know what?
Unless, of course, they use their iPod to podcast Morning Sedition.
Yeah,
then they're wonderful people.
You know what?
And I love them all.
Now I'm going to go. I'm going to go to iPod.com and see if it enchants me. I will be back. Whatever it is, Apple. Well, who cares? I want to be teased. I want to be seduced. 46 past the hour. Air America Radio.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio.
I'm obsessed. 51 past the hour, Mark Marion with Mark Riley.
Yes.
Sarah America Radio's Morning Edition. I went to Apple.com to look at the iPod. Not impressive. Not impressed. Oh, Kayla's got some on his screen. It's a little better. It's a little better. I just thought it'd be like, ah, look what we can give you. Look what we can do for your life. You know why older people don't have as many iPods?
Because they're old.
Oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute.
Time is precious, my friend.
That's right.
Time is precious.
And time waits for no one. And don't forget that.
Hey, time waits for no one.
I tried it your way on the subway.
Wait for me. Yeah, go ahead.
I tried it your way on the subway without my headphones.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
scary.
Crap, dude.
I know, because you can't
awful.
Handle it. Can't handle it.
I got some homeless ladies screaming at me.
You can't handle it. You can't handle reality.
I guess not.
Yeah, I guess that's true. But if you want to defend that. No, it's good. It's good, buddy. Yeah, just detach, man. It's not your concern. Just put your little headphones on and go about your life.
Rock on.
Here's something you won't hear. Help! Help!
Hey, I'm sorry, but wasn't your book called Jerusalem Syndrome? Like, who's attached from God?
Yeah. All right. No, I understand that, but I went through it. It's a phase. I understand. Eventually, you'll grow up. It's okay. It's nice to have some noodles and, you know, listen to your iPod.
Yeah.
All right. Time to give away a couple more tickets to me. This show's not enough about me, as some of our listeners complain frequently. They're like, hey, don't you get those emails, Larson? More Mark Maron. How come there's not enough Mark Maron represented on this show? All right. For all you people that resent that and resent that, you know, we're going to have some fun, so you might want to tune out for a couple minutes while the fellas here have a good time. All right? We're going to give away a couple of tickets to my show tonight. I sold that show at Tiffany Spacer's. Today's game is called... Now, Joseph Lieberman? Who is Senator Joseph Lieberman? Do you understand that?
Yes.
Who is? We don't know a lot about him, but our game today will illustrate that. How much do you know about him? All right? Today's game is called Connecticut Senator Joseph Lieberman... or Alf's dad. Now, you may not have seen the sitcom Alf, but Max Wright, the actor who played Alf's dad, looks and sounds uncannily like Joe Lieberman, just like Lieberman looks and sounds uncannily like a Republican. Now, here's how the contest is going to work. We're going to play four sound bites. Each bite is either Joe Lieberman or Alf's dad. The first caller to correctly identify the speaker in each of the four clips in order will win two free tickets to my show tonight at Symphony Space. Now, here we go. We're going to do it. You ready? Listen up, folks. And if you want to pre-dial your phones, as some people like to do, when the content. It's 866-303-2270. Clip number one.
For exposing gaps in national security and for his concern about world peace, which is something that I'm in favor of myself.
Okay. Joseph Lieberman, Alf's dad. Clip two.
Well, what it boils down to is we've got to take a closer look at our bills.
Joseph Lieberman or Alf's dad? Clip three.
Things are appreciated more when they're earned, not when they're just handed to us.
Okay. Joseph Lieberman or Alf's dad? Clip four.
This is something that we're trying to do. We're trying to do this together. This takes a lot of cooperation.
Okay, so that's it. One, two, three, and four. Yeah, you've got them all. You know what? Let me do them again.
For exposing one. Gaps in national security and for his concern about world peace, which is something that I'm in favor of myself.
Okay, clip two.
Well, what it boils down to is we've got to take a closer look at our bills.
Joe Lieberman, Alf's dad, clip three.
Things are appreciated more when they're earned, not when they're just handed to us.
And the fourth one, clip four.
This is something that we're trying to do. We're trying to do this together. This takes a lot of cooperation.
So that's our game, okay? 866-303-2270 is it's your challenge. You know, Connecticut Senator Joe Lieberman or Alf's dad. You've heard the clips. We'll play them again over the top of the hour. We are going to have a winner at some point, I think. All right, this is not easy, people. That's right. So, Riley. I'm going to be there at Symphony Space tonight at the Thalia Theater.
Yes.
There's going to be a lot of people there. I'm hoping my voice will hold up.
Your voice will be fine. Your voice will be fine. Mine's the one that's better. By the way, Joe Lieberman, senator from Connecticut.
Coming to Symphony Space?
And possibly, well, maybe. Mm. And he might even come to Symphony Space as defense secretary.
Uh-huh.
Because there's some people, there's some speculation around the Beltway that he may be the one to replace Donald Rumsfeld.
Well, he did literally kiss Bush.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, so that might have helped. I don't know. He's a Republican, kind of, isn't he? I mean, I don't get the guy. You know, I watch
him. He's like
him.
A neocon Democrat.
Oh, my God, I think I was. I guess that's what he is.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the
I'm being nice.
I know. Well, I mean, look, this is a guy who had some serious problems getting past the Congressional Black Caucus in 2000 when he ended up being Al Gore's running mate.
Okay.
Over some of the positions that he took, particularly about affirmative action.
It's interesting. I don't know a lot about him. I do. I know it's interesting. Does he wear a yarmulke all the time?
I don't know. I don't think so.
So he just basically his big issue was being able to go to services on Friday night. That he made sort of his orthodox stand on that he will not work on Friday night through the Sabbath.
Through the Sabbath, yeah. Yeah. And I think he's not the only one in Congress, but certainly he did take that stand and has not backed off it.
Yeah. Hey, Chris, I don't mean to change the subject, but which iPod do you have? 40,000 songs? How many songs can you put in your iPod?
I have a 40 gig. I believe I can fit 10,000 songs on it.
10,000.
Yeah. Oh, so that's the biggest one, though, right?
Oh, yeah.
So I'm going to need more than that. I'm going to need to be able to put more songs on it than that. 866-303-2270 is the number of the contest. I played the four bites. Is it Joseph Lieberman or is it Alf's dad? I'll play them again over the top of the hour. I'm going to need, like, room for 40,000 songs, I think. That's what I thought I was getting.
Yeah.
So until they make that, I'm not going to get one.
Whatever.
Yeah. 303. That's clever. Whatever. Did you make that up? 866-303-2270. We'll see who wins after this. It's Air America Radio. Good morning, folks. It's 6 past the hour. It's Morning Sedition. I am Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hi.
We're in the middle of a very important thing. We had the think tank going this morning. Let me tell you. Every so often we get these emails from disgruntled people with no senses of humor who think that radio's sole purpose is to somehow solve the problems of the world. And we agree with you. And that's why this morning, to really placate some of the people that think we may not honor what they believe the progressive agenda is, this morning we're playing Joseph Lieberman or Alf's dad. Now, it's important to know that as the Republicans are diligently reframing the cultural language for the next 30 years, that we are playing Joseph Lieberman or Alf's dad. That's right, you seething person out there going, it's exactly why I hate this guy, Maron. Well, guess what? Maybe you should call in and take a guess. All right, so let's listen to these clips again, okay, folks? Now, the deal is I'm going to play four sound bites. Each bite is either Joseph Lieberman or Alf's dad. You're going to call us at 866-303-2270. The first caller to correctly identify the speaker in each of the clips can come hear me some more later today, okay? I will be doing some of my classic bits and some new bits. And I don't say that lightly. I am not a confident man. So when I say classic, what I'm really saying in my head is tired things that I've done before. But for you, they'll be new. So I call them classic. So I'm not going to use them to beat themselves. I'm not going to beat myself up with myself. I will entertain you tonight as long as my voice holds up, and I think it will. So let's listen to these clips again. Okay, here is clip number one.
For exposing gaps in national security and for his concern about world peace, which is something that I'm in favor of myself.
Now, was that Joseph Lieberman presenting an award to former counterterrorism czar Richard Clark after the publication of Clark's book, Against All Enemies, in an effort to bolster Clark's credibility in the face of Republican attacks? Or was it Alf's dad after Alf hotwired the family's shortwave radio and figured out how to call Air Force One? You be the judge. All right. Now, listen to this clip. This is clip number two. Now, is it Joe Lieberman in January 2004 campaigning in New Hampshire during the Democratic presidential primaries, chastising the Bush administration for increasing America's foreign debt while refusing to rein in spending? Is it that? Here, listen.
Well, what it boils down to is we've got to take a closer look at our bills.
Or was it Alf's dad making comments that prompted Alf to try to make the family some extra money by getting a job as a cosmetics rep? You be the judge. Now, in this clip, listen closely. Is this Joe Lieberman on the floor of the Senate in 1994 debating the controversial Work and Responsibility Act, better known as the Welfare Reform Act?
Things are appreciated more when they're earned, not when they're just handed to us.
Or was it Alf's dad after Alf buys the daughter a Ferrari by selling off the gold from his spaceship? Okay? You decide. Here's our fourth clip, if I could. Now, is this Joe Lieberman on Meet the Press in March 1995 telling Tim Russert, it's weird, I know the name and then I read it and I act like a moron, or about the difficult, I almost said retarded person, and I realize that I don't want to misuse that. Now, about the difficult, I'm retarded, about the crafting bipartisan legislation in the Senate, which split, was this Lieberman on Meet the Press, okay?
This is something that we're trying to do. We're trying to do this together. This takes a lot of cooperation.
Or is this Alf's dad telling Alf's brother, who was playing an asparagus in the school play, that he has to work well with the other kids in the play? All right. Now, we're going to go to the phones and see what you got. The number is 866-303-2270. I'm not retarded. Okay, I apologize. I am mentally challenged a little bit in certain situations. Okay, I'm not going to take that lightly. Here we go. John, listening in Wisconsin, to the mic. What's up, John? What do you got?
Morning.
How are you? Nice to talk to you. Do you want me to play him again for you?
No. They all sound the same except clip number three, I believe. I know that is Alf's dad for sure.
Okay, so you're saying the rest are Lieberman?
I do believe, yes.
Okay. Well, you know what? I got to be honest with you. Oh, sorry.
Again.
I'm sorry, John. You know, but thanks for playing. John said that they were all Lieberman except for this
things
one.
Things are appreciated more when they're earned, not when they're just handed to us.
Yeah, that he said was Alf's dad. Now, let me just run through these again. Now, is this Joe Lieberman talking at an award ceremony for Richard Clark?
For exposing gaps in national security and for his concern about world peace, which is something that I'm in favor of myself.
Or is it Alf's dad after Alf hotwired the family shortwave radio? Is this Joe Lieberman campaigning in New Hampshire?
Well, what it boils down to is we've got to take a closer look at our bills.
Or Alf's dad making comments that prompted Alf to try to make the family some extra money by getting a job as a cosmetics rep. Now, is this Joe Lieberman on the Senate floor talking about the Work and Responsibility Act?
Things are appreciated more when they're earned, not when they're just handed to us.
Or Alf's dad after Alf buys the daughter a Ferrari by selling the gold off his spaceship. And is this Joe Lieberman on Meet the Press?
This is something that we're trying to do. We're trying to do this together. This takes a lot of cooperation.
Or were Alf's dad telling Alf's brother, who was playing an asparagus in the school play, that he has to work well with the other kids in the play? Again, a little challenge. Here we go. DeMarcos in Yonkers, what do you got?
Lieberman, Alf's dad, Lieberman.
Ooh. Sorry, buddy. No, I'm sorry, man. So thanks for holding on. Thanks for playing. I wish you could come tonight, but you can't.
Oh,
No. Oh, you're right.
Rough, man. Turning the knife in on the guy.
Yeah, right here. I wish I had the self-esteem. Guess what? You can't come see me because I am going to be great. No, I mean, I'm sorry you're not going to be there. Let's try again. I feel like we're getting close here. Todd, listening in Georgia to Sirius. What's up, Todd? What do you got?
I got Alf's dad. Lieberman, Alf's dad.
Oh, dude. Close.
Listen, can I say one thing?
Okay.
All right.
Is it going to hurt me in any way?
No. This is for the viewers of Fox News. You guys need to carry it a little bit more like that and say, is Karl Rove Jeff Gannon's love slave?
That's
the question.
I, you know what, Todd?
We had that discussion before we went on the air.
I hope to God that something like that breaks.
Wildest dreams that it's going to happen. What? I love it. Oh, it would be the best.
Wouldn't that be so great if there's just a picture of Gannon and Rove, naked? That would be beautiful. Okay, I'm trying. All right, we'll get on that picture. All right, the number is 866-303-2270. You know what we're playing. Joseph Lieberman or Alf's dad. You know, it's weird. I'm sitting down, right? I rarely sit down. Okay,
yeah.
Jane, listening to LIB in New York. Jane, give it a shot.
Alf's dad, Joe Lieberman.
Oh, sorry. I'm sorry. Oh, a little late on the buzzer, too. James, thank you for calling us. It wasn't right, but, you know, it was a great try. People there's some close ones, but not quite. I guess we're going to continue this. Well, you know what?
Yeah, we're going to continue
why not
this.
Let's just take up the rest of the show with this. How do you like that, people? Why aren't they talking about the issues? We're fighting for our lives here. Well, we have to get to the truth of this particular contest, and we will do it diligently after this. 14 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Join the morning sedition. Right now, call 866-303-2270.
What?
That's 866-303-2270.
You don't know until you've tried this.
Morning sedition on Air America Radio.
Damn good.
We're in the middle of a big contest here. It's 19 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yo.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. We're going to get back to these calls about Joseph Lieberman or Alf Stad in just a second, but we've got to do a little bit of this. Sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying. So we got us here this brand-new iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator. And let me just crank this baby up and get on with it. Here we go. From the New York Times, NHL cancels the rest of its season as labor talks fall apart. Let me feed that into the machine. NHL cancels the rest of its season as labor talks fall apart. Translation, hockey players' wives, children live in terror of too much downtime. There you go. All right, here's one from the Chicago Sun-Times. Kid Rock charged with punching strip club DJ. Let me feed that in there. What do you got for me? Translation. Call's evening, complete success. All right, from Reuters, coffee may reduce risk of liver cancer. What do you make of that machine? Coffee may reduce risk of liver cancer. Translation, millions to live longer, jittery, irritable lives. Okay. Thank goodness for the iNews 5000.
Yeah.
Getting back to the calls with our Joseph Lieberman or Alf's dad, we've got Darlene in New York City. Good morning, Darlene.
Hey, Darlene.
What do you got?
Hi, Mark and Mark. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Hey, good. Did I
just put
you?
That anywhere. I made that up just now. I'm kidding. I heard you drop something. I was making a joke.
Sorry.
Don't apologize.
It's your house.
Everything's okay, Darlene. What's going on? You got a guess?
I do. Alf's dad, Joe Lieberman, Alf's dad, and Alf's dad.
Ooh. Oh, sorry, Darlene.
Oh, no.
Do you have that? I'm sorry. You tried, and you were close. Do you have that thing in your throat like I do?
I do.
I know. What is that? Does everybody have it or what?
I don't know. It's been hanging on for a couple of weeks now, too.
Uh-oh. Oh, my God. I hope I don't have to wait that long. But, well, anyways.
Darn.
No, it's okay.
No, it wasn't about that. I really wanted to go to the show tonight.
Oh, I'm sorry. You'll get a chance to see me somewhere else. Have some tea. Take care of your throat. And
I'll
on morningsedition.com, I'll let you know. You can go there for tour dates. I'll let you know when I'm in town again.
Okay. Have a great show. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Goodbye, darling. It's so funny. That, you know, just put that anywhere. That's like the oldest line in the book. And it just blew right by. All right. So 866-303-2270 is the number. Here are the clips again. Joe Lieberman or Alf's dad.
For exposing gaps in national security and for his concern about world peace, which is something that I'm in favor of myself.
Joe Lieberman or Alf's dad.
Well, what it boils down to is we've got to take a closer look at our bills.
Joe Lieberman or Alf's dad.
Things are appreciated more when they're earned, not when they're just handed to us.
Handed to us. Joe Lieberman
or Alf's
dad.
Something that we're trying to do. We're trying to do this together. This takes a lot of cooperation.
You know what's hilarious about this is the political context for those of you who are seething at the lack of content appropriate to your progressively insulated disposition. This is really an examination, a deconstruction of who is Joe Lieberman really? You know, is it this difficult to make to figure out just who which one is it, Alf's dad or Joe Lieberman? Is that because we don't know who Joe Lieberman is? See, that's an interesting thing for you people who have no sense of humor. Ponder that for a half hour, and then later when we talk to a guest that you'll find non-engaging to you as well, you can just sit and wonder, you know, what about that Joe Lieberman? And then, you know, be sure to write us an email with a lot of spite and resentment towards me, because I appreciate that. Here we go. Omar, what's up, buddy? Had a long time no talk to, Westchester.
What's going on, baby? You know, I said that shit in my heart and my mind and everything. How y'all doing?
All right, buddy. Omar.
Hey, Mark, I forgot to tell you, your man, Wayne Gilman, shouted you out. He said you was in England, New Jersey, not England, O.M.4.
That's right. You remember that?
Yeah, that's all right. I'll get him for it.
That's right. I got the answers because I'm going to see you tonight, Mark.
Okay.
I got Alster, number one. Lieberman, number two. Austin number three, Lieberman number four.
Oh, sorry, buddy. Sorry,
oh,
man. It was close.
Yeah, man.
Sorry.
I still love you.
Yeah, I love you too, man. Good talking to you. Thanks for calling. That was a close one. I thought he was going to hate me. Here we go. Barry in Missouri. Wow, Missouri. Don't see a lot of calls from Missouri. How are you doing, Barry?
Hey. Great. How are you guys doing this morning?
We're great, man. We're great. What do you think?
Joe, all the way.
Oh.
Sweet.
Oh, close. Close but wrong. What are you listening to us on in Missouri there? On the internet?
On satellite radio and my computer.
Okay, right. Ryan, Barry, thanks for calling.
I listen every day.
Oh, that's
thanks,
great, man.
Barry.
Thanks a lot. Take
thanks,
it easy.
Man.
You bet. All right, here we go. Streaming in Tampa. We got Gary. What do you got, Gary?
Well, that second one sure sounds like Lieberman, but they're all Elf's dad.
Yeah.
Whoa, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Gary in Tampa, Florida. There you go. Congratulations. You get to fly up here and see me tonight.
Come on, man. You don't have a Learjet? Jet?
Unfortunately.
Yeah, I wish.
Unfortunately.
I knew we're talking.
Unfortunately, I can't afford to fly you up. But, you know, obviously you can't go to the show, but we're going to send you some Air America swag. We'll send you a T-shirt with me and Mark on it maybe and some other stuff.
Yeah,
how's
that?
Okay,
yay,
buddy. Thanks a lot, man. Thanks for calling. Thanks for winning. Stay on the line, and Brendan will pick up.
All right.
Okay,
all right,
buddy. Wow, that's right. All Alf's dad. Yay. What do you got with that? What happens now? Should we still...
Well, at least, you know what? At least we don't have to do the music DJ thing.
Yeah.
Oh, what station hooks you up with the greatest swag in the universe? Why, it's America Radio.
There's all kinds of swag floating around. Hey, we got Lou in Vermont. How are you, Lou?
What's up, Lou?
I'm doing fine, and I had the answer, too.
Okay.
And the other guy from Missouri beat me to it.
He was in Tampa, the guy who won.
Son of a gun. And I'm on my way down, not right now. I'm heading south.
All right, well, you did get, so you did have all the answers because Brendan validated that off the air.
Right.
You're welcome
yeah.
to come. You want the tickets, they're yours.
No, actually, I told him I would like to donate them to one of the other contestants. There was a woman, Darlene, who sounded like she had, you know, something wrong with her throat, and I think maybe your show would clear up her throat. So,
all right. Well,
yeah,
okay, well, we'll get Darlene to call back, and we'll give her the tickets. Thanks a lot, Lou. That was very kind of you.
Nice work, Lou.
Please give a plug to WFMU Freeform Radio in New Jersey, okay?
All sure. right, man. You just did.
You got it.
Lot, man.
Take care.
All right.
Does that have anything to do with us?
No.
Hi, man.
But he plugged it anyway.
No, that maybe he was, you know, he was specifically reaching out to the people that have departed our show because of the ALF contest and need something more validating to their ideas and anger. But I don't even remember the call letters right now. But it's in New Jersey, so, you know, just flip around. So, Darlene, Darlene, call us back at 866-303-2270, and the rest of you can hang up. The game is over. Gary was the first to win in Tampa. We're going to send him some swag. Swag or swag? What did we decide?
Swag. I like swag better.
I think it's swag.
I know, but it sounds swag.
All right. I'm with you.
Swaggish.
And thank you to our friend from Vermont, who's Lou in Vermont, who donated the tickets to Darlene, who will come to my show tonight, and that's it. That was fun. That was our first. Yesterday was the first, but today was actually the first real radio contest, and I hope you enjoyed that because it's important for the country.
There you go. It had a truly progressive outcome. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about disabilities.
Matt Frazier.
Someone knows.
Yep.
Yeah. Got a show. About disabilities.
He's a thalidomide victim, and we're going to talk to him after this on Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
All right, 34 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley, Air America Radio.
Yes, it is.
That's the network, Ron. We got a caller, you know, obviously since our president is openly operating in a different reality, we think it's important that Americans know what's happening in his alternate universe. Luckily, we have a staffer who lives in that world. So now on the phone once again is Planet Push correspondent Lawton Smalls. Good morning, Lawton.
Good morning, Mark. I thought they were all Lieberman.
Yeah, well, you were wrong, buddy. How do you like that? Yeah. Okay.
You're kidding me.
No, no. It was
that
all,
wasn't Lieberman?
No, it was all Alstad, man.
Well, that was a good game.
Yeah. Dude, let's not get all warm and friendly so quickly. I got some questions,
all
right?
Let's
talk about this Jeff Gannon, James Guckert, whatever the hell his name is. I want you to explain some things about me, about this guy. Will you explain it?
Sure, Mark, of course.
Wait, all right. First, posing as a real reporter, this Gannon wrote for the Palin News Service, which isn't even real. It's nothing but a front for a Republican group run by a shameless Texas neocon millionaire.
Yeah, that's right.
Plus, this Gannon got access to the White House press conferences, even though he did not qualify for a congressional press pass at all.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Dude, what's going on? At the press conference, he asked Bush all these nauseating, like, softball questions, calling Democrats people who seem to have divorced themselves from reality.
Yeah, I heard that. Yeah.
All right, then it turns out he was a prostitute. How about that? There were photos of him posed in his underwear on gay websites.
Yeah, Mark, he's something else.
Plus, this guy turned up on a list of reporters targeted for questioning by a federal prosecutor in the case involving the outing of Valerie Plame.
Yeah, I saw that. It sure did. It sure did.
Dude.
Name just showed right up.
So what do you have to say? You mean you're just admitting that this was wrong? Are you, let me understand something. Are you agreeing with me, Lawton?
Yes, Mark. Absolutely wrong. Contemptible.
What are you laughing at?
You fell for it.
What?
Our people planted him to expose the corruption of the entire news media, and y'all fell for it.
Now, whoa.
We planted him.
How did you do that?
Game.
Come on.
It was like your Lieberman game.
How did you do that?
Gannon, okay, was like a polio vaccine. We infected the system with a mild form of the disease, and then the body's natural immune system rose up and killed it. We were just trying to see how long it would take for the so-called real journalists to catch on that there was a phony there. Y'all fell for it.
Wait a minute. Sure,
can't say we don't have a sense of humor, Mark.
Yeah, well, sure I can.
Come on.
Okay, dude. All right. If that's true, what were you trying to prove with this then?
All journalists are like Jeff Gannon.
Come on.
Stupid, disgusted, lying, biased perverts, every one of them. Just like Jeff Gannon, every single journalist at one time or another, you may not know this, has posed in their underwear on a Paul website.
Oh, stop.
I've seen pictures of Paul Krugman, Dick Ware, Cy Hurst, Jack Germont, Forzu Derek Ahi, Helen Thomas.
Oh, come on.
That would make your hair curl.
I bet they would.
Helen,
hey, that's a lie, though.
Here's another thing. All reporters work as prostitutes.
Wait a minute.
They teach street hustling and journalism.
Come on.
At Columbia, for instance, you have to turn tricks in the back seats of gypsy cabs for a month before you can graduate. That's just part of the curriculum.
That's ridiculous.
Nothing but rent boys and rough trade.
Now, wait a minute. All right.
Rough trade.
No. The Bush administration's policies are so weak and offensive that they had to pay for reporters to support them. That's what's going on. They had to pay for it. It's disgusting and it's pathetic. Yeah, you bet. Cry. That's right. Let it out. Sorry. What's the matter now? What?
Sometimes people have to pay for it.
Oh, God.
Sometimes they have to pay good money
to feel
the tender caress of another human being.
Oh, no.
Even if he's just some skinny kid looking for drugs.
Oh, my God.
You don't know how many times I'm...
Oh, this is sad.
Hey, big spender.
No.
With me.
Oh, no.
I pay for it twice a week.
Oh, no. Come on.
I've done it in a van.
No. But too much information, buddy. Oh, my God. That's just awful. What?
Y'all fell for it.
No.
Real one from a fake one. A pig and a poke. The whole thing of rotten, Mark.
Yeah, that's
rotten
it.
Rotten journalist.
All right, goodbye.
Here's a headline. God loves you. Deal with it!
All right, weirdo. In a van. Oh, my God.
Twice a week.
We keep learning more and more about Lawton every week. Right now, our guest in studio is one of the thousands of people who were born with partially developed limbs in the 1950s and 60s due to the drug thalidomide. A pregnant woman took the drug as a sleep aid before it was pulled from the market. He is the star of the new play, The Plid Show, here in New York City. It's very popular. He's with us today. Matt Fraser, good morning.
Good morning. Hi.
Good morning.
How's that show doing?
It's going great. Yeah, we've got all the big hitters have reviewed it. We're selling out most nights, so anybody listening that's thinking of coming, better book early.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll give that information in just a second.
Okay.
So now, how does it start? Obviously, this is based on your condition.
Yeah. Well, it's based on I've got short arms.
Yes.
I guess listeners who are unfamiliar with this condition, it's best if you just go look at my website and have a look at me.
Okay.
Rather than me spend 10 minutes painfully describing my impairment for you. But suffice to say, I've got short limbs, and it's because my mother took this thalidomide pill while she was pregnant during the 35th and 52nd day of pregnancy when the limbs are forming of the fetus. Uh-huh. Thalidomide impairs the growth of blood vessels.
Sure.
And so it impaired the growth of our limbs. At the time, it was a huge, monumental pharmaceutical incident.
Yes.
Because basically, before then, everybody believed everything that the pharmaceutical industry told them.
Sure.
And after then, they didn't believe everything they were told.
Very true.
And it's because of thalidomide, as we point out in the play, that all drugs now have that warning. You know, if you're pregnant or nursing a child, please seek the advice of a health professional before using this product.
Sure. So how do you engage the audience? Now, by the way, your website is Matt Fraser, MattFraser.com.
That's right.
Now, I'm assuming that you're inviting people into the world of your particular handicap, and there's got to be a certain amount of humor, and you've got to make it okay for the audience to take this in. How do you go about doing that?
Oh, very much so. I mean, I play a lounge singer, and the place starts with a song, and then you see me with my sister, who's changing me out of one shirt and into another, and there's a lot of banter going on, and it pretty much sets the standard for the rest of the play. It's a very funny play, written by Richard Willett. It's got a lot of humour, a lot of emotion, but it's very important up front to pile on the humour and the gags and to set the score. I mean, one of the first things I do is how do you say this in I know how to say it in English, I hope it's not rude, take the piss out of a guy with short legs and short arms.
Sure.
By actually doing an impersonation of him.
Okay.
Now, in a way, I mean, that's something that, okay, a lot of able-bodied people might feel that they weren't allowed, in inverted commas, to do. But
give us a taste.
Well, it would be hard. I mean, basically, the line from the play is, there's a guy with no arms or legs singing, if you're happy and you know it, clap your hands. And everyone gets somewhere bloody warm and runny. And then I get down on my hands and knees, tuck what I have with my arms behind my shoulders and go, if you're happy and you know it, clap your hands. And then there's clapping going while I move my shoulders.
Okay.
That's pretty rude, right?
Yeah.
But what we're doing is saying, it's okay, you know, this is reality. People do talk like this. We can laugh about it. And then we get embroiled in this huge love story that's between me and the actress Kim Donovan, who's playing Rachel Stoll, the doctor who I meet.
Okay.
Me and Duncan, my character, is not me, Matt Fraser, the actor, but we do have a lot of similarities. We've both got short arms. We've both been burned a lot by doctors. You know, when I go to a doctor, say for a sore throat or something, it's pretty soon, within the first 5 minutes, even though, you know, let's face it, I'm in there to get my antibiotics or whatever for my sore throat, they'll go, well, was that thalidomide?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. I say, yeah, it was a terrible tragedy. It had nothing to do with me, way before my time. Just for medical interest and everything. Is it all right if I could just have a little feel.
This happens all the time with you?
Yeah. Yeah.
In doctor's office.
Yeah, okay, I've comedied it up for you, but that's pretty much what happens. And so Duncan is also burned by that kind of experience, you know, the character that I play. And so he's very chippy with the very attractive Rachel. And so it's hard for the love story to start, but it does start. Oh, boy, does it go.
Okay.
Oh, Matt Fraser. Chelsea supporter.
Yeah.
I'll forgive you for that for now, since I'm an Arsenal fan. But anyway, you have done a lot in the UK. Obviously, you're here in the States.
Uh-huh.
And I noticed, certainly in my experience, there's a difference between how the British deal with humor and how Americans do. How do the two countries deal with disability differently, if at all?
Well, I think roughly the same. What I've noticed is that although political correctness is apparently dead and buried, according to everybody, when it comes to disability in this country, the eggshells come out and everybody takes care walking on them. That's what I've noticed. In Britain, I wouldn't say we're ahead of you guys. It's just different. The vicious strain of humour that is currently popular where you show the awfulness of humanity by some terrible character being hideous to people. Like, you've got that that new kind of anti-PC show here. Well, we've got versions of that in Britain, and it deals with disability in a really full-on way. Because I think to shock everybody out of the safe, protective cocoon of political correctness, you know, which, although protects people, also does cocoon them in a false sense of reality.
Let's talk about that a little more, because I got a question I want to ask you about that when we come back. We're talking to Matt Fraser. His show is The Flid Show. It's here in New York City. You can go to morningsedition.com, and we will refer you to where you can get tickets for that show. We'll be back in a second. It's 44 past the hour, Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning Sedition, on our highest rated, most respected news show in America, on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, we're going to land this thing. This is Mark Maron. I'm here with Mark Riley.
You know, I just saw the most amazing thing. I have to say this.
Yeah.
You and Matt were bopping your heads at the same time in complete unison. It was amazing.
We're talking to Matt Fraser. He's the star of The Flid Show here in New York City. The Flid Show is based on his experiences in life as a victim of a thalidomide. Who he has a condition where his arms are short, and you know, it's interesting we're talking about this. I'll tell you to explain what flid means in a second, because when I was a kid, I had this fascination with this sideshow. You know, I had books about, I had very special people. I had all these books. And it wasn't like, in my mind, when I look back on it, it was never because I thought that they were funny or I was making fun of them, but people who have physical liabilities that, that transcend them actually operate in a completely unique world than other people. And people who condescend to that world by either making fun or whatever, that's their natural defense mechanism. But you offer sort of your life, just your existence, is at a completely, it's in almost in a different time zone than what I am in some respects.
On many levels, On many levels, I'm living on my own planet, like Bush.
Right, right. Now, how do you, because you must walk through life, and even if people are not judgmental necessarily, you're going to get those looks.
Well, of course.
Yeah, and then,
you have to furnish yourself with an array, an arsenal, if you will, defense mechanisms and stock phrases.
Uh-huh.
For instance, one that I got from a great film called When Billy Broke His Head, which is an American independent film about a disabled guy on the road. Great film. Which is, if I bend down to pick something up, my face almost licks the pavement. And so you walking by must think, oh, that guy needs help.
Yeah.
But of course, I don't actually need help. And I don't really want help. So sometimes I have to say to people, you know, I know you think I'm drowning, but this is just the way I swim. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's an interesting way of putting it, actually. Yeah.
Well, it is wild because, you know, when you put the headphones on, even when you were playing, like, some air drums there, I mean, I can't help but look at you.
Well, of course not. And it'll take you, I mean, you know, after you've been with me for a day, you'll have seen me do everything once.
Yeah.
And voila. It's the same with me, you know, when I have lots of friends with lots of bits missing or added bits or what have you, you know, and when I see them do something for the first time, it's fascinating. When I took my friend who has no arms at all to a Chinese restaurant.
Yeah.
And gave her a fork, and she went, no, I want chopsticks, please. You know, it wasn't just the Chinese waiters peeping out of the kitchen who were interested. It was me, too.
Oh, what, how did she work?
Well, she snapped them in half, put them between her big and second toe, and adeptly shoveled all the food into her mouth.
There you go.
Dude.
Yeah. Yeah. Matt, when did you, at what point during your life did you learn to get, I guess, comfortable with your disability?
Well, that's an interesting thing. It took me until my late 20s, to be honest.
Really?
One of the reasons was because I was in a rock and roll band. I was a drummer, and, you know, you're eternally 18 when you're in a rock and roll band, even if you're 50, you know. And so there's some kind of arrested development going on there. But also because it's a kind of coming out that you have to go through. This might sound odd to you, but I had to come out as a disabled person to myself.
Sure.
All my friends already knew, right? But I had to sort of acknowledge that what it really meant was, of course, I always knew I had short arms, but I had to acknowledge that society treated me like, in a way, crap, because I looked different, and that was unfair, and it hurt. You know, I'm a real warrior. You know, I love
my martial
arts.
Is that why you became a drummer?
I mean, I'll show them.
Yeah. Because it's so weird that you said that. Like, my best friend in junior high, Dean, had cerebral palsy, so he had, you know, he was, you know, pretty twisted up.
Yeah.
But he was the drummer of our band.
Right.
And
well, there you go. That must resonate with you quite a lot, then.
Yeah. It does, actually.
And yeah, I've always been a, Well, it was like, that's why I started martial arts, you know, because somebody said, oh, yeah, why don't you do martial arts? And everyone laughed. So I thought, right.
Yeah.
Well, that, you know, well, I know. I mean, I trained hard for 5 years and I got my black belt, you know.
Oh, really? So now anytime anyone says, you're like,
yeah.
Like last night when I watched Ong Bok Thai Warrior.
Yeah. Take that, bully.
No, but you know, laughing about disability is important. And I've been staying with Eliza Beckford, who's the director of this play down at Parkside. I want to big up the Parkside Posse because it's a fantastic area, Parkside Avenue, Brooklyn. Thank you very much
for making
me feel welcome. It's a great area. And we've been having a great laugh. I mean, you know, we have a few drinks in the evening and it really gets raucous. And we say the most awful things, you know, but you have to as a catharsis. You really do in life, you know. You have to acknowledge that, you know, some people get treated like crap. Now, you guys, we're having a laugh about this. Can I just say something?
Yeah, right, sure.
We didn't talk about this in the break, so I hope it doesn't throw you, but the last time I was on air in America, it was on the Howard Stern Show, and I can't tell you what an awful, horrible experience it was. You know, I can give as good as I get, but those... I can't say that word, but those people, they twisted it so that you can't, you as an individual have no voice, and it's just their nasty hatred pouring down on you.
But they think they somehow think it's okay if they're shameless about it.
Yeah,
and we're being shameless about it.
Right, but we're doing it with respect.
It's coming from a place of love and not a place of hatred. It's as simple as that. I don't mind offensive humor if it comes from a place of love and it's talking the truth. Well, you know, like Stuck on You, the film.
Yeah.
I think it's a great film, but if you go, the Farrelly brothers doing conjoined twins, are you sure? Yeah. But actually, you watch it, it's got a big heart, that film, and a lot of love.
We did a promo that actually one of the executives decided not to run anymore for your appearance here, and we talked about the Flid Show, and we said Variety gives it 2 thumbs up.
That's what I wanted. That was in every interview. They were like, what do you hope for this? Raven Snooker was interviewing me for Time Out, the piece we did. Like, what would you hope for this? And I went, 2 thumbs up. And she went, oh, man.
They feel guilty that you thought of it. Isn't that weird?
Yeah. Well, she just thought it was shameless and beneath me, I think, as a cliche, you know. But I thought it was funny, you know.
Well, that's an interesting thing, too, is that when you do the joke, then, you know, people who already thought of the joke in their head but don't think of themselves as the kind of person that would do that joke feel guilty even when you do it.
Yeah.
You better tell us what FLID means.
Yeah. FLID is a derogatory... Nobody can pronounce thalidomide. So in the playgrounds of England, it became FLID. And I just want to put in a quick thumb joke. Guys, out there, often you feel you're having a hard time. Okay? Next time you're feeling having a hard time, go to the kitchen, get your condom, and try and put it on with no thumbs. Then tell me about a hard time, all right?
Okay.
That'll take a while. Unless you're good at it, and I'm sure that, you know, that's the interesting thing, that even like you said, that you get used to things, just watching how you have learned and have adapted, it's pretty fascinating.
Well, I mean, you know, I had to find a technique. I was a rock and roll drummer, for God's sake. You know, there were times when I could have used one, you know.
Yeah. What band, quickly, what was the name of the band?
The good bands I were in were called the Grateful Dub and Joyride, speed metal.
The Grateful Dub and Joyride?
Grateful Dub was the kind of, like, the Grateful Dead, but a reggae version. Hideous, and it was.
Okay. All right. So there, well, thank you so much, Matt Fraser, for being here.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
The Flid Show. You can get tickets or information at morningsedition.com. Here's the liberal agenda for today from the Streisand Compound. 1. Protest America's non-participation in the Kyoto Treaty by burning a sack of tires on your front lawn. How about that? 2. Sneer and ask your boss for an $80 billion raise to pay for Bush's defense budget. All right, try that. 3. Praise police for busting Kid Rock on assault charges. That's one Bush supporter in jail. It's a start. And 4. Praise Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue. It's so empowering that they would devote an entire issue to women with eating disorders. 5. Today's phrase is dropping into conversation. The Army's not developing robot soldiers, man. They're already here, buddy. They're disguised as ATM machines, and they're watching you 24/7. Wake up, sheeple. You drank the Kool-Aid. Matt Fraser, again, thank you for being here. The Flid Show is off Broadway now in Brooklyn.
52nd between 10th and 11th. www.theatermania.com.
That's in Manhattan.
All right, that's in Manhattan. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you. This has been a great show. And tomorrow morning, we're going to have Ken Burns, Terry Jones, Mike Doty, and a bunch of other folks will be on tape. But tomorrow afternoon, we'll be in the Randy Rhoads Show. Have a good one. Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Did you know?